Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and we're back. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't tolerate sponsors. We don't take calls or any of that sort of thing, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back, and, well, here we are. Here we are, and what more is there to say? I think I want to start with a little bit of commentary on the election, since that is the big, big story. But I was having a conversation just the other evening with my extremely attractive audio engineer, where she reminded me that it is the undecided voter who will decide this election. That's right, it's the undecided who very well may decide. And she also pointed out that if you are still undecided, then you are obviously stupid. So by definition, ladies and gentlemen, the election will be decided by the stupid. And isn't that what we would expect to devolve to after a couple of hundred years of democracy? We will be ruled by the decision of the stupid. And there you have that. And now you know why I hang out with my extremely attractive audio engineer. But should I talk about the fly swatter? Because that's been bothering me. So when I was young, I didn't even have to think about killing a fly with a fly swatter. I just grabbed the fly swatter and bam, it was over for the fly. But I've noticed lately that I'm having a harder and harder time manipulating a fly swatter effectively. And I wonder if this is happening to anyone else. As we age, is that one of the skills that drops off first? Is that a sign of something? Because I was chasing flies around my living room the other night, and I looked like a complete fool. If anybody had been videotaping, I would have paid them to destroy the tape. I would have paid them to put it in a vault with Huma and Hillary's electronic devices, never to be seen or heard from. By the end of the night, I did manage to kill 2 out of 3 flies, but I almost broke my ankle, just not to put too fine a point on it. And I missed more than I.
We got too many flies.
I missed more than I hit. Well, out here on the thing is one thing you don't think about when you start bringing on the livestock, is that there is an exponential increase in the population of flies. Especially with the chickens and the peacocks, yeah, they're the major source of the fly infestation. But oh well, hopefully it'll prevent me from getting Alzheimer's, because at least I'll have to keep chasing the flies around, and it may stave off the signs of premature aging a little bit longer. But so there, the fly swatter thing has been. Now should I address the? I have 3-4 pages of comments. Well, let's start over at Denver Bible Church this morning, where I was back in the saddle teaching children's church, and I taught the children about the government today, because I told the children, and these are all kids between the ages of 3 and 10, I think, and I told them, you're hearing a lot about the election. Yes, yes, they've heard. They all knew who Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were, and I asked the kids, is the government good or bad? And they all said bad. Which shows that most of the parents at Denver Bible Church are doing a good job. But I asked them, is the idea of government good or bad? And they were somewhat confused on that. So we delved into that, and I convinced them that the idea of government is not only good, but it was instituted by God. And the children learned by rote memory that the 3 responsibilities of government are as follows: justice, war, and roads. So the kids will know that now for the rest of their lives, that those are the 3 and only 3 responsibilities of government. But after church, talking with a few buddies of mine about the election and the momentous events of the past weekend. One of my friends said to me, "Is it wrong for me to want Trump to win just so that later I can remind all the gullible evangelicals every time he breaks a promise that he made to them? Is that wrong?" And we all agreed that that's a bit fleshy and probably wrong. But I confessed to him. I said, "Is it wrong for me to want Hillary to win so that later I can relish in watching her being toppled from an even loftier height?" And we all agreed, yeah, that's probably wrong too. But at least we were able to get it out, you know, get it out of our systems. And so, well, I will address the election because I do have something profound to say. Because I've lost another friend over this election. Let me just say, if you have been convinced that this election is so important that it requires you to compromise on godly principles in order to prevent whatever you're fearing, the imminent destruction of America by a shrill, bitter old school marm, if you think it's worth compromising godly principles, then you're gullible, and you're not wise, and you're probably sinning. I mean, if you're going to turn to an unrepentant, philandering strip club owner as God's instrument of temporal salvation for the Republic, well, you're just a gullible fool. You're not wise, and you're probably sinning there. Yeah. All right. So anyway, the knives have finally come out for Hillary Clinton. By the way, I was not able to attend the broadcast here for the past couple of weeks because I've been locked in a library with Jim Comey and his wife going through WikiLeaks and just trying to convince him that, look, history is going to frown upon you, my friend. And so, hey, it paid off, right? Was it worth missing a couple of weeks? So the knives finally came out. Much later than I would have thought. I would have thought that the Democrats who hate Hillary Clinton, which is every Democrat, hates Hillary Clinton to some degree. And if you measure that hatred in concentric circles around Hillary Clinton, the closer you get to her orbit, the more hatred there is for her, because some of these people know her personally. And that, I mean, that enables you to hate more perfectly when you actually know the person. A person like Hillary Clinton. And Jim Comey, by the way, one of those people in her orbit for the past 20 years. And so the knives finally came out, and I may not be able to enjoy watching Hillary collapse from an even loftier height, but I will have the opportunity, and I will not revel in it, but just to remind my Christian brothers and sisters who have endorsed Donald Trump, an unrepentant, child-killing strip club owner, a lifelong Democrat, the whole thing. I will have the opportunity to remind them how gullible and foolish they were and to welcome them back into the fold. Absolutely. Upon their repentance, I will welcome them right back into the fold. Now, all right. I guess we can go right to the decline and fall of Western civilization, right? Isn't that usually what we cover here? Does that get to be a bit much? I'll try to mix in some good news somewhere. But let's go over to the United Kingdom, the formerly Great Britain, where young couples are having vasectomy parties. Instead of baby showers, they're inviting their friends over to their vasectomy celebrations. This is the Daily Mail reports that they invite their friends over to car showers, where the guests help the young couple name their new car. They play board games like The Price is Right, where they talk about what they can buy now that they've saved money by not having kids. And, one couple has posted a blog that they proudly call We're Not Having a Baby.com. Made me LOL, said one reader. Congratulations and have a happy children-free life. The blogger, this brilliant example of young womanhood in the United Kingdom, she says, quote, "I had swallowed the motherhood mandate hook, line, and sinker. I had never given myself the space and time to question whether I really, really want children. And it turns out she doesn't. And so, hence, England will be ruled by the Muslim hordes, perhaps even within my lifetime. And so there you have that. Vasectomy parties. All right. So I hang out with some younger people, and when I look at their behavior and their goals and what animates them in life, I ask myself, is this why George Washington's army froze to death in the forests? It's just, there it is. And speaking of the decline and fall, let's move deeper even into the decline and fall of Western civilization file, as brought to you here at the Weekly Worldview, and only here, by the way. Sweden has opened its first atheist cemetery. Sweden, yes. Let's see. A teacher in Sweden first proposed the idea. Imagine that. Public school teacher comes up with the idea of an atheist cemetery because he said he wanted people to, quote, decide for themselves what their graves should look like. All right. So that's what secular humanity is obsessed with, deciding for themselves. And I've got nothing against deciding for oneself, but I would advise you to do it in light of the advice of the living God. That's all. You can still decide for yourself, but you might want to look to his advice so that you don't end up, well, in an atheist cemetery. Let's see. The school teacher sent an application. He negotiated with local representatives of the church. And the Church of Sweden said, yeah, we'll maintain an atheist graveyard. Sure, we have no principles left anymore. Yeah. The article is from The Independent in London, and they say that Sweden has the highest number of non-religious people in Europe. 76% of Swedes say they're either not religious or convinced atheists. Yeah. The only country to score higher on the survey, of the global survey, was communist China, where religion is officially frowned upon and where answering that you are religious could result in, well, it could be punishable by law. So you can imagine in China there is a certain level of coercion, whereas in Sweden they're just full-fledged on a grease pole with jet rockets headed straight to hell is what's going on there. And so there's Western Europe for you. In a nutshell, vasectomy parties and atheist cemeteries. That's great. But let's come back over the pond here to America, where I have I was not aware of this in any way. This is from the Sad Religion file, a report from the Mirror, which is a broadsheet there in the UK. Singer Janet Jackson was spotted in public for the first time since announcing her pregnancy. Did we know she was pregnant? He asked. We did. I was not aware that Janet Jackson was pregnant. Must confess, I haven't followed her career that closely since Good Times, I think is where she lost me. Was it Good Times that she was on back in the 70s? I can't remember. Obviously, I'm not a big fanatic about Janet Jackson, but apparently she's pregnant, and she was spotted in public, and the paparazzi, of course, when they spot one of these famous people, they take their pictures, right? Well, Janet was dressed in full Islamic attire. She's wearing the hijab. She is believed to have become a Muslim. Okay, well, if she's wearing the hijab, I would be fairly convinced that she has become a Muslim. Apparently, she married a Qatari billionaire. I was not aware of that at all. You told me this? Well, that just shows you how much I care about Janet Jackson.
Oh, me.
No, I care about your opinion, but it's when you opine about Janet Jackson. I lose interest very quickly. So apparently I did know about this, but I just was unaware. Let's see. Janet's going to become a mother for the first time later this year at the age of 50. That's one good thing coming out of this whole thing. And she was browsing for children's clothing with her Islamic billionaire husband, going through the mini hijabs and the baby me burka. Picking out clothes. Anyway, how is it that you go from a borderline pornographic stripper to now wrapping yourself in burlap? You know, this is a sign of the times. Western civilization can be observed and represented here in Janet Jackson's life. A life of unrestrained immorality, gluttony, hubris, greed, pornography, and filth. And by the time she reaches her mid to late 40s, midlife, she realizes that she's missed out on what was really important, which was having children and believing in God. But she's so confused now, and she's really, really still greedy, so she marries an Islamic billionaire. And very similar to what's happening to the psyche of Western civilization, as the guilt of generation after generation of filth and pornography and immorality begin to rack the minds of the body politic. And in the end, we may all end up being ruled by the darker side of our nature as we turn in search of something meaningful. And as a nation, we, Western Europe, Christendom as a whole, ends up latching on to the completely wrong thing. Wipe the sweat off my brow after that one. Thank you, Billy. Put the guitar away. We got to get back to the news. I want to go. Speaking of looking for children's clothing, I got a report earlier this week about the new fitting room situation at your local Target. I received the news directly, a direct report, a firsthand account, as a matter of fact, from my extremely attractive audio engineer. As she was shopping for children's clothing at the local Target fashion location, she noticed in the they wandered into the fitting room area. As you can well imagine, she noticed a 14-year-old boy standing there looking confused. And at first, she just thought, what this confused young child, not surprising in this day and age. He looks like he doesn't even know where he is. But then she realized that this poor 13-year-old boy had no idea which way to go because there's no more boys and girls dressing rooms at Target. And so a normal 13-year-old boy is standing there with an armful of clothing that he would like to try on, but he feels uncomfortable and somewhat confused because, well, there's girls and boys, and it's just... And so, well, there you have it. The new cisgender fitting rooms at Target. It's confusing normal people. Now, should I get right to... I should probably get right... there's a fantastic article. Hold on a second, because I was going to do it later, but I'm going to do it now, because here it is. All right. So this will be the crux of today's broadcast, I'm sure. An article that I copied from Breitbart. It is the opinion of a professor of English at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island, that the advocates of transgenderism aim to destroy all common sense. That's their goal. They're not inclusive and loving. They're actually in the process of destroying that which we all hold to be normal and common and things that we all understand in common. That's what they are seeking to destroy. The professor, Anthony Esselin, says the fight is really about pressuring Americans to fracture their shared sense of reality. Wow, that is deep. I'm actually encouraged that there is a professor of English in an American university with the insight to state such an obvious fact so eloquently, to fracture our shared sense of reality. He says it cannot possibly be to any living thing's advantage to be confused about male and female. As it is, sex is far more strongly marked upon the human body than it is on dogs or cats or horses or birds. A man's face is not like a woman's face. A woman's voice is not like a man's voice. A man's shoulders do not look like a woman's shoulders. And a woman's hips do not look like a man's hips. Ordinary and healthy people love that it is so. Yes, we do. We love that the difference. We love it. So he goes on to pretend, therefore, that we do not know what we immediately perceive is to do violence at once to human nature, language, and the intellect's capacity to apprehend reality. If I cannot say there is a man walking down the street, then how can I make any reliable judgment about anything at all? Wow, that is profound. Professor Anthony Esselin, there from Providence College. He continues, when transgender activists say she wants all people to feel safe, regardless of their sexual identity, that is not true. I believe he's made a value judgment. He just said that is not true. That could trigger 5,000 lesbians. That could trigger 100,000 trannies. When they say they want people safe, regardless of their sexual identity, he says that is not true. What she wants is that ordinary people should feel uncomfortable. That's what she wants. Indeed. Indeed. He goes on, the transgender speak demand for gender-bending pronouns is already being imposed in K-12 schools, even in bathrooms and during science classes, by President Barack Obama's army of eager progressives. And now this is where I part company with Professor Esselin from Providence College, Providence, Rhode Island. I don't part company on anything he said up to this point. In fact, I agree wholeheartedly, and I believe he should be made, he should be given the head of all education in the higher learning, if there is such a thing. How can I say? I completely support Professor Esselin's opinion, but to blame this on President Barack Obama, I believe, is to put too fine a point on where the blame lies, because one could look at the life's work, a watered-down version, certainly not as full-throated as Barack Obama's support of transgendered idiocy, psychological suicide of transgenderism. But a watered-down version has been offered for many years by the likes of Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, line them all up. George W. Bush. Yeah. So thank you, Dr. Esselin, for pointing out Well, it's just something I wish I could have said so eloquently, and I'm glad that I had his article here. And I will post a link so that you can read the whole thing, because there's a lot that I was not able to cover that is pertinent. All right, now, I said I would mix in some good news. And now that I've reported on the violence being done to our collective psyche by the insane homosexualists and the transgenderists and the other mentally deranged, suicidal, idiot children who have somehow become the leaders of our culture, of our institutions, of our churches, of our government, how have we come to this? But even the good news that I'm about to report is rooted in something horrifically evil. I could look through. Do I have any just straight up good news? Just do it? Okay. There's a petition that was circulated in West Virginia regarding a man accused of a brutal crime, a murder. He brutally sexually assaulted a 10-month-old girl and murdered her. So a petition was put up on the White House's website. You know how they have their petition, and if it gets so many signatures, I don't know, Barack Obama will print it out and roll up a big joint or smoke it. I don't know what the deal is, but I've heard of this thing. So a petition was put up on the whitehouse.gov petition page asking people to sign to publicly hang Benjamin Taylor, who's the West Virginia man who sexually assaulted and killed this 10-year-old girl, 10-month-old girl. The petition received tens of thousands of signatures. Well, that's the good news, that not everyone is insane. There are a few people, at least in West Virginia, who understand right from wrong. Of course, after the petition began gaining signatures, the White House's We the People site pulled the petition down. One petitioner wrote, quote, "Prison is too good for child rapists and their ilk. Let us hang these creatures publicly. Let us make examples of them and allow the American people to attend these hangings so that the accused may be ridiculed," unquote. Hey, that sounds like my pastor. I'm going to have to get together with him tomorrow and find out if he posted to the petition there at wethepeople@whitehouse.gov, because words to that effect have been uttered from the pulpit at Denver Bible Church at least 100 times. At least. Which is why I attend. Because of the good common sense and judgment of the pastor and even some of the people who attend Denver Bible Church, which you're all welcome to visit. We're all packing heat there, by the way, just so you know. Let's see. Well, now, I could try to get into what this pervert Benjamin Taylor did. The 10-month-old girl was found by her mother naked and covered with blood and unconscious. I can't do it. I'll post a link if you want to read the details. It's horrifying. West Virginia abolished capital punishment decades ago, according to this Fox News 61 report out of Huntington, West Virginia. West Virginia abolished capital punishment decades ago. One state lawmaker has promised to introduce legislation to bring the death penalty back in the next legislative session, which will be months and months and months longer than this particular bastard should be allowed to live. But that's where we are. That's another unfortunate side effect of the Democratic Republic form of government that we have chosen, where our leadership is decided by the stupid. Yes. I've met a lot of people, by the way, in my lifetime. Most of them I would not want them to decide how my nation is governed and by whom. Most of them. In fact, the vast majority of the people I've met in my life, I would not want them to have anything to do with anything at all to do with deciding who has their hands on the levers of power. Thank you very much. Now, let's go to the justice file, or Reason number 1,085 to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. Jeffrey Scott Jones has been declared guilty by a jury in Orange County, California. He taught advanced placement English at Libra Academy in Huntington Park before he was accused and now convicted of sexually assaulting a teenage girl. At the moment the jury began to read his guilty verdict, the government school teacher pulled out a razor blade and slashed his own throat right at the moment he was being declared guilty. Indeed. He sexually assaulted this girl for, 6 months or so. Since the abuse, the OC Register reports that the girl, well, her life's been destroyed. She's been in youth homes, juvenile hall. She's even lived on the streets. Stole a bike, tried to run away. She's a total mess. And this pervert is allowed to live after what he did to her. It's unbelievable to me. Orange County, by the way, officials are offering counseling services for anyone who may have witnessed the slashing in the courthouse. Well, if I were counseling anyone, I would tell them that if indeed it was a suicide attempt by this pervert Jeffrey Scott Jones, if he was actually trying to commit suicide, let me counsel you that he may have been the only person in the courtroom who understood what the just sentence should be. I'm on my way to the promised land. Hey! I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. Don't stop me. The Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Welcome back. Speaking of the public schools, I was lecturing in a public school this past week. That's right, I was lecturing in an Aurora, Colorado public school, and I may have triggered a girl unintentionally. Unintentionally. Part of my lecture was about the human immune system and how sophisticated it is and how it utilizes symbolic logic and how the immune system in its pristine state, working as designed, cannot be defeated by any disease or any injury. It has almost miraculous capabilities to heal and to fight disease. And I described surgery that is performed in utero on babies in the womb with spina bifida. Surgeons go in and they suture and they scalpel and they do bone grafts and they remove tissue, add tissue, stitch it all up at the end. And most of the babies are born without a scar. At which point, a young lady in the class, probably 17, 18 years old, raised her hand. And she said, how is it that they can be doing surgery or anything if the baby's not alive yet? It's not even real yet. And there was a moment of silence across the entire classroom of maybe 12, 15 people. And the school teacher said, well, it most certainly is alive. And I said, you know, within moments of fertilization, within the first few hours, there's a identifiable DNA. It's a boy or a girl within hours. And, well, she got quite flustered and had to stand up and started walking and started asking questions that obviously pointed to the fact that someone had taught this girl that the baby wasn't real or alive until it was born. And I thought to myself afterwards, we calmed everything down and we had to change the subject for the sake of the young girl. because she was getting very flustered. And she was, at any moment, I was afraid she was going to snap and flip out. After the class, I was driving home and I'm thinking, is it possible for a young person in America today growing up in a completely godless household, having never even been introduced to the idea that there is a God, is it possible that that person could be raised to the age of 17, 18, 19 and actually believe that the baby's not real or not alive until it's born? And I'm thinking maybe it is possible. I think it maybe is possible. Because one can mold the minds of young children very effectively with either the truth or with lies. Anyway, it was just the school teacher reminded me of that moment. I hope I get an opportunity to speak with her again. Let's move on. Reason number 1086, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. This is as reported on hotair.com. A judge in Illinois recommended last week that a transgender girl, meaning a boy, just to be clear, this transgender girl at the center of a lawsuit, over restroom and locker room access. Well, the judge has recommended that the tranny be allowed to use the girl's locker room at her Illinois high school, meaning it's a boy. But did I make that clear? A transgender girl is actually a boy, and the judge says the boy should be able to go into the girl's locker room. In an 82-page report, Magistrate Judge Jeffrey T. Gilbert opined. 82 pages it took him to explain why a mentally deranged and obviously abused young boy should be allowed to use the girl's bathroom. Quite often, when one is justifying something irrational and insane, it takes many, many, many words. 82 pages in this case. Hot Air reports that this case is one of many that challenge Obama's efforts to expand bathroom access. Or, as the good professor put it, to do violence to what we all hold to be obviously true. This is one of many cases. Let's see here. The wording in the ruling, a transgendered person's gender identity is an important factor to be considered in determining whether his or her needs, as well as those of cisgender people, yada, yada. So the judge, in his 82-page ruling, used the word cisgender as if it's a word, as if it's a real legitimate word. And that's how these things become real and legitimate, by the way. And that's how a civilization loses its collective mind and loses its grasp on what is real and true when judges start issuing rulings with words like cisgender, and then they're taken seriously by other people and not immediately arrested or at least admitted to a mental institution for an examination, which is what should happen to this judge and President Obama, by the way. He needs his head examined, obviously mentally deranged. The judge goes on to say the constitutional question in the sense of sex assigned at birth, while ignoring gender identity, frames it too narrowly. As if there's a question about sex. By the way, I think that the liberals have been plotting this for decades, if not centuries. But I remember back in the 90s when the word sex was replaced with the word gender. And gender being a literary term, sex being a biological and scientific term. But we've thrown out what's biologically and scientifically obvious to anyone, and we've replaced it with a literary phrase, and you know the thing about literary phrases is there's room for interpretation. And so by allowing the language to be changed and allowing people to call sex gender, we open the door to the idea that there could be some question about one's gender. And now we have judges using the term cisgender in a ruling. Can you just, all right. let's move on from that. Let's not address those type of topics any longer. Well, we have one more. I apologize. I apologize, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. The Supreme Court says it's going to decide who should be able to use the boys' and the girls' bathrooms. A momentous decision by the Supreme Court. They will come down from on high, and they shall decide, they have said. To which I said to the 8 or 9, however many perverts there are on the Supreme Court right now, I said, I've already decided, thank you very much. I don't need you to render an opinion, which is all you have is an opinion, and we know about those. Do I want to go in on the case? I don't want to talk about the case, but we've got people on one side saying that the trannies should be able to run wild, and we've got other people on the other side, supposedly on our side, saying that, well, this isn't an interference in local school administration, you see. This is an abuse of executive power. This is improper to be coming from Washington, and... there are questions, by the way, about security and privacy for the students. These all need to be considered as we consider and consider and consider. And this is why we're losing. This is why the transgender insane people are winning and why we, the normal people, are losing. It's because even on our side, the people who are ostensibly on our side, nowhere is anyone standing up and stating, number one, God made us male and female. How about that? And number two, this is criminal insanity. What you're saying is criminal insanity, and the advocates of such insanity should be arrested and charged with corrupting the morals of a minor, corrupting the morals of adults, corrupting the morals of a nation, of a civilization. It's criminal insanity to be asserting that people can change their sex and that we should all not be sure about anything at all anymore. It's criminal. And these people should be arrested. And the fact that our side doesn't even realize that means that our side is condemned to lose. Even though there are a few of us who are still standing up and stating what is obviously true to any rational human being, we have been outnumbered by the people who don't know what's going on. We find ourselves outnumbered by the stupid, is what's happened, unfortunately. And it's probably our own tolerance for their stupidity that has led us to such a sad situation. And indeed, it is sad to look at where we are. In fact, we're at reason number 1,088 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. High school students in Virginia have set up a Planned Parenthood club. Yes, they're at Maggie L. Walker Governor's School, a public high school for academically advanced students. You know what that means in the public schools. Yeah, that's right. That's a high school student who can read at a sixth grade level. They get put in the advanced school. A chapter of Planned Parenthood Generation Action has opened a club at the school. Now, these clubs are usually reserved only for college campuses. But as the perverts become more and more bold, and as hapless moronic parents become more tolerant of criminal insanity, these type of things now are leading right into the high school. The Planned Parenthood Club sponsor, by the way, is an English teacher at the high school, Dr. Janet. And she's married to F. Scott Spencer, professor of New Testament and Biblical Interpretation at the Baptist Theological Seminary at Richmond. Yeah. Yes. The minister dubs himself a male feminist biblical scholar. And his wife started the Planned Parenthood Club at your child's government school. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Let's go to the fake religion file. The fake, phony, baloney religion file. I've got two stories. Jerry Falwell Jr. Defends Donald Trump and his lascivious comments about women, how he moved on a married woman. Did you all hear that, by the way? It seems to me that a lot of my Christian brethren just didn't hear that. He bragged about moving on a married woman, which is just disgusting, but it doesn't bother Jerry Falwell Jr. He says this whole thing was planned. It's a conspiracy, said Jerry Falwell Jr., an attorney. Falwell said he was upset by the tape, but it does not shake his support for unrepentant, adulterous strip club owner Donald Trump, and child killer, by the way. A socialist, a homosexualist, by the way. I'm going to lose plenty of friends during this election, and you know what? It feels good to shed them. If that is their thinking. And Jerry Falwell Jr. was never my friend. I think the guy's a chump from day one. A biblically illiterate con man. Bamboozling ignorant evangelicals. And he's made a fine living doing it, as has one Pat Robertson. My dad always used to call him Pat Robinson. My father had a habit of mispronouncing the name of people he did not respect. He used to mispronounce my best friend's last name on purpose, and he did it, and probably to this day, if I talked to him about it, he would mispronounce his last name. Anyway, my dad never listened to a word Pat Robinson had to say. Him and his idiot 700 club. Get off my TV, my dad used to say. So it's a latent influence of my father. Pat Robertson, another in the long line of bamboozlers, like Falwell says, He's all excited about Donald Trump, says he won the debate. He came back just like the Phoenix, says Pat Robertson, allegedly Christian philosopher, citing a pagan myth. as he lauds God's a savior to America, Donald Trump. Yes, Robinson says, look, 11 years ago, maybe there was a conversation where he was just trying to look macho, but and we thought he was dead, but he's like a phoenix. He's come back, and he's come back strong, says Pat Robinson of the 700 Club. Just tell your story, walking, you moron. All right, now, if you think that's bad, listen to this. Listen to how corrupt and how I'm looking for a word to describe the level of hubris in our governing class. In September, the House of Representatives passed the Babies Act. Have you heard of the Babies Act? Now, you'd think that was something good for babies. Maybe they actually care about babies. The Babies Bill was voted on by a Republican majority in Congress, and it won 389 to 34. So the House passed the Babies Act, and now President Obama has signed it into law. The Babies Act stands for Bathrooms Accessible in Every Situation Act, or the Babies Act. How about that? And what this does is it requires diaper-changing facilities in male and female restrooms in all public federal buildings. Yes, they have now passed a law that there has to be a baby-changing station in every male and every female bathroom, although they're a little behind the times because there may not even be male and female bathrooms by the time they hire their cousin or their brother-in-law to run the company who's going to go out and do the inspections. There may not be male and female bathrooms by that time. The bill says that within 2 years, all federal public buildings will be required to have at least one changing station accessible to both men and women. The stations must be deemed safe, sanitary, and appropriate, which means, yes, more hiring. But for inspectors, now we need baby changing station inspectors to make sure and our government continues to bloat and rot and fester and just get bigger and bigger and less sane. It's an astonishing level of hubris amongst out-of-control lawyers to feel that it's appropriate to waste any time and money on making sure that, here's what they said, quote, no parent, where is it? No parent should ever have to worry about changing their child's diaper in a safe and clean environment. Well, who said that? What do you mean no parent should ever have to worry about that? I've had to worry about it. Every parent's had to worry about it. And the fact that there are lawyers in Washington trying to make it so that I never have to worry about that, that bothers me. I think there's bigger fish to fry. Rather than worrying about whether or not I have to lay my baby down on a filthy table or whatever and change the diaper. You know what? Most of us can deal with it. We figure out a way to get by. For crying out loud. The law doesn't cover restrooms that are not in public buildings. So by definition, we're all still going to have to worry, unless we're at the Social Security Administration. So even in their language that they're going to make it so we don't have to worry, the law they passed, it doesn't make it so we don't have to worry. It makes it so they can hire their illiterate nephew who can't live and make a living in the real world. It's now he can be a changing station inspector. That's what that's all about. Just unbelievable. On to the war file as we're rapidly running out of time here. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, according to the Free Beacon, she is declining to comply with an investigation by Congress. So when was that allowed? When did we start allowing that? There's an investigation. I really would rather not participate. Well, but you are one of the subjects of the investigation. Well, I just don't want to participate. And then Congress goes, oh, okay, she's not going to answer our questions. I guess we will let's turn our attention to the baby-changing crisis that's engulfing the nation. Let's leave aside this investigation of the $1.7 billion in cash that was sent to our arch enemies, Iran, by Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch and everyone in the executive branch of government who should probably all be arrested for what they've done. And I know you say, Doug, that only happens in third world countries. Well, guess what, folks? Wake up. Guess what you're living in? You're living in the political equivalent of Nicaragua in the 1950s, okay? The senators presented Loretta Lynch with a series of questions about how the cash payment to Iran was approved and delivered, and so she sent one of her assistant attorney generals to respond on her behalf, refusing to answer the questions and informing the lawmakers that they are barred from publicly disclosing any details about the cash payment, which was bound up in a ransom deal aimed at freeing several American hostages from Iran. When did we start letting people do that? Not only am I not going to answer your questions, you cannot disclose any of the criminal activity that you're aware of or that you're investigating. The Free Beacon reports that details about the deal, the $1.7 billion in cash, details, they report, are unclassified but are being kept under lock and key at a secure facility on Capitol Hill, along with Anthony Weiner's iPhone, apparently. A senior congressional source told the Free Beacon that the details of the negotiations are so damning that the administration's best strategy is to ignore lawmakers' requests for more information. And why is that their best strategy? Because Congress will allow them to do that. They will allow an obvious a criminal act to unfold before them and then allow people not to answer questions, and it just doesn't matter anymore. And you know what I think it is? I think it's that every Republican and every Democrat in the Congress is a criminal. And there's so much filthy, dirty, dark baggage in their deep closets that they have lost any moral authority to render any judgment of anything right or anything wrong on anyone ever, because they're riddled with the guilt of their own perversion and corruption. I mean, they may as well be Caligula. That's what I think Washington, D.C. resembles after dark, the court of Caligula. And it's from the Congress and the Attorney General right down to the Speaker of the House and the rest of the corrupt perverts running the country. All right, so there's that. From the war file, by the way. Let's go out to Morton County, North Dakota, where a militarized police force has overwhelmed hundreds of Dakota Access Pipeline protesters and pushed them from the line of resistance back to their main camp, which I believe is called Camp Barry Ho. Or it could be Camp Soros. Yeah, so what do the cops do? They say a militarized police force has overwhelmed these access these oil pipeline protesters, and they just pushed them back to their main camp. These people were squatting on private property and should have been arrested, but they're not going to be because of what I just alluded to. The cops pushed them away from a new camp they had built directly atop the pipeline easement, someone else's property. The unrest continued. Police reported 2 fires, people throwing Molotov cocktails, 2 incidents of shots fired, a man treated for a gunshot wound to his hand, flames, thick black smoke. Police arrested 141 people. Charges include engaging in a riot, maintaining a public nuisance, and conspiracy to endanger by fire and explosion. Look at that. They finally did arrest some people after the Molotov cocktails and the gunshots. Thank you very much. This is Barack Obama's legacy, by the way. And this may very well be Barack Obama's future career as a global community organizer. This will be his legacy. It's going to be the violence, the angst, the agitation, the riots, the thick black smoke and fire and Molotov cocktails. That is Barack Obama's legacy. And I'm certain that right now he is organizing to turn it into quite a lucrative career going forward on the global stage, seeing as he has never been held responsible for any of his criminal or treasonous behavior. He will now take that act onto the world stage. And speaking of the world stage, the Pentagon is warning people against using equipment made by China's Lenovo company over concerns about cyber spying. The report contained a warning that Lenovo was seeking to purchase American information technologies companies in a bid to gain access to classified Pentagon and military information networks. You know, I had never thought about this, but my laptop's made in China. Your laptop's probably made in China. Everything's made in China. They could have their malware and their spyware in there. One official said Lenovo equipment in the past was detected beaconing or covertly communicating with remote users. So imagine that. You whip out your MacBook, and all of a sudden you're beaconing back to Beijing, especially if you work for the Department of Defense or the Pentagon, or an American tech company, or an American defense contractor. We're all beaconing back to Beijing, which is a little scary. Let's see, back to Iran, quickly. Iran is, according to reports by Iran's state-controlled press, this is from the War File, another Free Beacon report, senior Iranian officials have been floating the possibility of further payments from the United States since the White House agreed to pay $1.7 billion as part of the deal to release American hostages. Iran is detaining U.S. citizens in Iran's notorious Evin prison, where inmates are routinely tortured and abused. The Revolutionary Guard has been handling prisoner swaps with the United States, and Iran says... And some of those Revolutionary Guard officials say they expect many billions of dollars to release those U.S. citizens still being detained. 6 hostages have been sentenced to 10 years in prison by Iran in the past month. That's 6 Americans sentenced to prison by Iran, for crying out loud. We got 2 of them here, 10 years in prison, 2 Americans on charges of cooperating with the United States. That's the charge. And Barry Ho and his team of suicidal idiot children are willing to negotiate with these people. Siamak Namazi and his father, Bakir Namazi, have been sentenced to 10 years just over the past 2 weeks. The State Department did not immediately respond, as they have other things going on that they're concerned with over at the State Department. Their primary goal is to help prepare filings and pleadings for the transgender bathroom case. So they're not able to focus in on the Iran situation at the moment. Meanwhile, finally, from the War File, according to CNN, hundreds of ISIS fighters are fleeing Mosul. You've been hearing about the assault on Mosul, the impending taking of Mosul by the Peshmerga and the Iraqi army and other unaffiliated I guess friends of Barry, friends of Hillary, You know, the guys who scream Allahu Akbar whenever they launch a mortar, those guys. They've been on the verge of taking Mosul since April, I believe. Well, it turns out that hundreds of the ISIS fighters are fleeing and crossing into neighboring Syria. A tribal leader, familiar, says dozens of ISIS militants and their families are fleeing the city of Mosul each day. And I'm wondering, why are these people being allowed to leave? How is that? How is that? Well, it is. Why are the Russians allowing them to leave? Why are the Americans allowing them to leave? It leaves one somewhat unsure of exactly who is fighting who and why. When it comes to Iraq and Syria and the Islamic State. But listen to this. Don't be down in the mouth. According to Iraqi Joint Operations Command Center, 78 towns and villages have been liberated. 772 ISIS fighters have been killed. 23 have been detained. 127 vehicle-borne explosive devices have been destroyed. 2 bomb-making factories have been discovered. And nearly 400 improvised explosive devices have been detonated so far. Doesn't that sound like a Vietnam-era body count report that would come out of one of General Westmoreland's lackeys? This is not how you win a war. And we should have learned that in Vietnam. But apparently we have not won it, and apparently the intent here is not to win the war. And the intent is not to destroy ISIS, or you wouldn't let any of them flee. But that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. We've become outnumbered by the stupid, and they're actually in charge. And, well, I don't see things looking up in the near future, but hey, I'll focus on my family, you focus on yours, and we'll do right by our Creator, and that's what will matter in the end on Judgment Day, which is far more significant than Election Day. And with that, I will leave you. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And of course, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. He said, "Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you."